The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
Pastor Ricky, he is what we call the lead pastor, meaning he gets to decide who preaches what and how long the text is. And as I received a call from Pastor Brandon this week saying, the text is too long for us to read, so let's see if we might be able to par that back. So we got to talk to Ricky. And thank you for reading it all, because it's important for us to cover it all. But my fear is there is so much in our text today that I believe we may just scratch the surface. But I'm praying that God would have, even in the scratching of that surface of our text today, that we would take what he has for us and encourage us in our walk. We've been introduced to the Hebrews, the Israelites, in their bondage in Egypt. And I don't need to re-describe what they're facing. We know they're at the place where their slavery, their bondage is become oppressive, and God has called Moses to deliver them from bondage, deliver them from that oppression. And he has gone back to them, and he has said, this is what the Lord has asked us to do, and they believed him. And so Moses and Aaron went in and said to Pharaoh, hey, and I'm sure with all the confidence that you could muster, because God sent us, and they had forgotten the part about Pharaoh won't listen, but they went in with confidence and asked for a festival, asked for 3 days to go into the wilderness, and then obviously 3 days back. So let's say they hang out for 3 days in their celebration. We're just looking for a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks of vacation. And Pharaoh, in response, he doubled down and began to oppress them in a greater way and said, we'll no longer provide the straw, but you're going to have to go dig and work for the stubble. And as we saw last week, the people oppression, their bondage became painful. Their bondage became overwhelming, because now they had to even dig for just stubble to produce what was demanded of them. And when we come to our text today, we realize that it's an impossible request. The oppression has been too much, so the managers, the Hebrew managers who have been set over their own people, go into Pharaoh and they ask for relief. And we know in asking for relief, Pharaoh's response again is he now triples down, and that oppression continues, and he accuses them of being weak, and he accuses them of simply trying to escape. Well, we know the real reason that's been introduced earlier is Pharaoh is afraid of the Hebrew people because of their numbers. And his goal is to eradicate the Hebrew people. And this is a part of his plan C, I think we've gotten to now, of belittling and reducing and actually committing genocide against these people who were in their land. He wanted them gone. Well, when they came out from meeting with Pharaoh, they saw Moses and Aaron, and it says they were waiting for them. And I think Moses and Aaron were waiting. Okay, good. This is the next part of our strategy. The managers themselves, they'll go in. And, good cop, bad cop. We went in. We were the bad cops. They're the good cops. And this is all going to work out. Well, they came out irate with Moses and Aaron and actually accused them of disobeying God, and that they deserved God's judgment. They obviously had done something wrong. They obviously had disobeyed this God in some way, because what they said they would do, they failed in the accusation. Then Moses turns around straight to God and says, God, why did you even call me? This isn't working. It's gotten worse. And I love verse 6. Verse 6 is a key. It's a key in all of the Exodus story, because in verse 6 we have now the introduction in its complete form of that covenant that God has with his people, where God simply looks at Moses, doesn't answer Moses' question. He just says, now you'll see what I will do to Pharaoh. Now you can see what I will do to Pharaoh. See, what we have in our text, where we pick up in verse 15 of chapter 5, and then what begins in verse 1 through verse 9 of chapter 6, is recognizing that the people needed to come to the place of total hopelessness, so that when God responds and delivers them, when God gives them their only hope, the gospel, there will be no way that they can take credit. There will be no way Moses can take credit. There'll be no way Pharaoh can take credit. There is no way anyone can take credit other than the fact that God himself has delivered them from bondage. All glory will go to the Father, for he will deliver them from their bondage. And in order for that to happen, you and I, just as the Israeli people in that day, must be at a place of total hopelessness, total failure, and then humbly come before God and step back and see what God can do. Now let the hand of God deal with Pharaoh. Because of a strong hand, he will let them go. And because of a strong hand, he will drive them from his land. I just want to spend a few minutes talking about that hopelessness. You know, I've just said that God wants us and needs us to be in a place of total hopelessness. Well, that's not found often in the help books. That's not found often in the psychology world where we say, you know, God wants you hopeless. That sounds a little discouraging. Why would God want me hopeless? And we need to understand why God wants us hopeless. But the other reality, flip side of that, is the enemy. Satan himself wants us hopeless. Satan wants us in a place of being hopeless. God needs us to be in a place of being hopeless. And what we find in this story is both the enemy forcing the people into a place of hopelessness to destroy them, God bringing them to a place of hopelessness so that he might restore them. Well, that hopelessness goes back to how they're described. Remember back in chapter 2, verse 24, God heard their groanings. It's mentioned again in chapter 6 and verse 5. I've heard the groanings of the Israelites. That word groaning is only used four times in the Bible. These two in Exodus, once in Job and once in Ezekiel. And in Job and Ezekiel, that word groaning is associated with the groanings of a wounded, dying man. The word is actually the sound that someone who is dying, that guttural death sound that a person is making at that moment just before death. And although many of us have probably never experienced that, some have, but many haven't experienced that type of groaning. You know, Hollywood helps us, and you know, and I think of Luke Skywalker when he's had his hand cut off by Darth Vader's lightsaber, and he's out on the edge, and he's ready to fall. He's defeated, and Darth Vader says, "Luke, I am your father." And the response, that guttural groaning of Luke, "No!" And then he falls back to his apparent death. That's the groaning of a dying, defeated man. That's Hollywood. Can't take that much serious. I've only experienced with a cat. We had a cat named Lucky. Lucky had 13 toes. That's why Lucky was called Lucky. And Lucky was a black cat with 13 toes, and Lucky wasn't very lucky because one day Lucky decided that he would meet Bonnie when she was returning home. And we were in Michigan at the time, and we got this cat, and Bonnie said the cat can't be in the house, and so the cat was outside, but it was hot one day, and so the cat got to come inside and never left. And as a result, we knew the cat needed to do its business, so I put a little kitty door into the garage, and the cat would go into the garage to do its business. Well, we didn't use the garage except for storage, except in Michigan in the winter. You go out, as everyone in Michigan does this, you clean your garage so you can get your wife's car in the garage, so during the winter, her car doesn't get covered in ice and snow. So I had just cleared the garage, and that day, Bonnie came home, she opened the garage door, and she pulled into the garage. Well, little did Lucky know that every other time the garage door went up, she would go out and meet Mommy in the garage. This time, she met Mommy's tire in the garage. Lucky turned around, ran back into the house where I was, and the groaning and the noises and the death that followed has scarred me for life. Not really. But that is more explicative of the word that's used. When God says, "I've heard the groaning of my people," they are in a place of total misery, total hopelessness, without any answer to their position. And after these Israeli managers have gone in to see Pharaoh, things got worse. He uses the word when they come back talking to Moses. They said, first of all, we're in trouble. Verse 19 and in verse 23, they said, we're now in trouble. And verse 23, Moses says, now they're in trouble. That word trouble is evil. In fact, they're describing the fact that their response to their meeting with Pharaoh was not just Pharaoh saying, you're a bunch of lazy people and you stink and I don't like you. The response was, you have made us a stench. Pharaoh wants to get rid of us and you've given him the excuse to do so. They knew full well that Pharaoh's plan was to destroy them and eradicate them. In fact, the beatings that they received, they knew. It is impossible for us to meet the quota. We are going to be beaten to death. They knew a death sentence had been placed upon them. So at this place, the people, the leadership at least knew, after talking to Pharaoh, there is literally no hope. I mean, there's no hope of deliverance. Let alone there's no hope of escaping the pain and the bondage, and there's no hope of escaping death. They are at a place of total hopelessness. In fact, at the end of chapter 6, verse 9, the end of our text today, when Moses shared with the Israelites the gospel, when he shared with them the covenant that God had, he said they did not listen to him because of their broken spirit and hard labor. Broken spirit just means simply their breath was gone. They had no heart. They were brokenhearted. And their captivity, they were in captivity with no hope to escape. The brokenhearted and the captive, that's how they saw themselves. That's how they identified themselves. And that was their new reality. We are doomed. We are hopeless. Many of us, every one of us must come to that place of hopelessness before the gospel, our only hope, before the covenant that God has for us can become real in our lives. Every one of us must be at that place. But the problem is, just as we read in verse 9, that those who are hopeless often do not receive, cannot trust, will not believe the gospel that's presented. The actual hopelessness that's necessary for us to realize there's nothing we can do unless God does is that same hopelessness that will often turn us into ourselves and not even believe that not even God can take care of this. Not even God's gospel truth can help me with this. And so what I want to do at this point is come back. First, let's look at that covenant. Let's look at that relationship. Let's look at the gospel that's been offered to the hopeless people. And then let's see how they responded to it. Instead of responding in belief and trust, how did these hopeless people respond to that covenant promise? And how might we apply it in our own lives? Well, as I said, Exodus chapter 6, verses 1, actually verse 2 through 9, 2 through 8, is the covenant as it's portrayed in a very legal format. You notice it starts, the Lord God. I am the Lord. Actually, I am Yahweh. I am who I am. I am the Lord in verse 2. And he ends with that as well at the end of verse 8. I am the Lord. Old world covenants started with the name of the one entering the covenant. And it ended with the name of the one entering the covenant. Because a covenant, unlike a contract, did not require two people's signature. It only required one. The one who is the author of the covenant and the one who is the guarantor of the covenant. And a covenant is unlike a contract. If I make a contract to purchase a house, I say, I will give you the rest of my money for the rest of my life and you will give me the deed to this house. I'll do this and you'll do this. And most things that we experience in life truly are contracts. I'll do this for you if you do this for me. And if you don't do that for me, I will no longer do this for you. We know how contracts work. Covenant, however, is where someone says, I'm going to do this no matter what you do, whether you do anything for me or not, this is what I am going to do. And don't worry, I'm going to take care of it as well. I'm going to make it happen. I'm the power behind it. I'm the authority behind it. I'm the wealth behind it, the strength behind it. It's my covenant, and I'm giving it to you, expecting nothing in return. That's a covenant, and it's described for us, and we know it's he first came to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I went to them, but it's interesting. He says, they didn't know me by this name, meaning God promised even to Abraham. We call the Abrahamic covenant. He promised a covenant relationship with Abraham, but Abraham really never knew him by this name.
He knew he had been spoken to by a God greater than all the other gods. But he never knew his name. Moses is the first that he has said, this is my name. And now this covenant, he identifies clearly with him and who he is. And we call this the Old Covenant. I think it's important for us to know that the Old Covenant is the New Covenant. I want to read through this Old Covenant again, each point. There's actually three sections to this covenant, and there's 7 points to this covenant. And I want to change the word covenant. I want to start talking about for what it is, the gospel. We have here in Exodus chapter 6, the gospel. 3 aspects to the gospel, 7 points to the gospel, right here laid out for us, very concise, very clearly in legal format. But as we are reading this, I want our ears open to hear a bit of how the New Testament, what we call the New Covenant, reflects this, echoes this in a very clear way. But I'll need a volunteer to help me with that. So if there's a volunteer somewhere, Lucas Fears, thank you for volunteering. Here's a microphone. Lucas is going to be a preacher someday. He doesn't know that. But I thought this would be a good opportunity for him to come. I'm going to read through this covenant. We're going to see the points on the screen. But Lucas is simply, because he's new, he's young, I can't be the new covenant, I'm old. He's going to just let us hear a tone from the new covenant that reflects what we read here. I am the Lord. First, there's deliverance. I will bring you out from the forced labor.
Matthew 11:28. Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest.
I will rescue you from slavery to them.
Colossians 1:13. He has rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of the Son he loves.
Second is relationship. Point 3. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and great acts of judgment.
Galatians 3:13. Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us.
Point 4. I will take you as my people.
Hebrews 8:10. I will put my laws into their minds and write them on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people.
Point 5 in relationship, I will be your God.
Hebrews 8:10. I will put my laws into their minds and write them on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people.
Third part of the covenant is the blessing. Point 6, I will bring you to the land.
John 14:3, if I go away and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, so that where I am, you may also be.
And the 7th point, I will give it to you as a possession.
John 14:2, in my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I am going to prepare a place for you?
I am the Lord. Thank you, Pastor Lucas, for sharing with us today. First step. When we read this Old Gospel Covenant, it rings so loudly in the New Covenant through the person of Jesus Christ. And that's why I know without any doubt that what's offered to the people in Exodus has been offered to us as well. That's why I have no doubt whatsoever when God says to Moses in verse 6, now you'll see what I can do to your bondage. Is the same God who says, now you'll see what I can do with your bondage to sin through Jesus Christ. Now we can see what Jesus and understand what Jesus says. And he says, come to me, all you who are burdened and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Now we can understand when Jesus opened the scroll from Isaiah 61, when it says he's come to heal the brokenhearted, set the captive free, help the lame to walk and the blind to see. Jesus in Luke reads that and said, I am here to fulfill this. And that's why we can sing that he's able. He's able to heal the brokenhearted, set the captive free, make the lame to walk again and cause the blind to see. When we recognize in our hopelessness, there's only one hope, the gospel. Well, as I said, in verse 9 of chapter 6 told us, the people didn't believe. Because of their pain, because of their bondage, because of their hopelessness, even this gospel message was empty on their ears. They didn't believe it. Didn't think it applied. Didn't think it come true. Didn't have any trust. Didn't have any confidence.
And oh, how true it is when people hear the gospel in this day and age in which we live, the world in which we live. Most people, upon first hearing of the gospel truth, they respond in the very same way. They don't believe it. They don't understand it. It sounds too good to be true. That's not what I've been taught, or know that it would never work for me, or whatever it may be. There's some reason why they respond, and it goes to those same two things. They're either so broken in spirit, so hopeless, there's nothing that will help, and they are so focused on the burden and their labor, they're not looking for escape. In fact, that's what verse 9 is telling us, actually. The people were not looking for escape from their bondage. Which takes us back to a couple points about these hopeless people. We've already seen hopeless people have a hard time believing the gospel. Now again, it seems ironic. We have to be at a place of hopelessness for us to be open to the gospel. We have to let God solve this problem. Recognize we can't do anything about this. We're hopeless. But yet it is hopelessness that often keeps people from responding to the gospel. And why is it difficult? Well, because hopeless people are often focused on the pain rather than the bondage. We're focused on the pain rather than the bondage. It's a very different thing. Pain is a result of bondage. But what we find with these Hebrew leaders, when they went into Pharaoh, did they ask to be delivered? No, they asked for relief from the pain. They asked that the beatings might stop. They asked and very much said, "We are your servants, Pharaoh. We're not asking to go anywhere. We're willing to remain in bondage as long as the pain stops." And the reality is, that's where most people are today when they're introduced to the gospel. I want the pain to stop. I'm not looking to be delivered from my bondage. The gospel comes to deliver us from the bondage. Yes, a bondage that results in pain, but it's come to deliver us from bondage. People say, "I don't want that. I just want the pain to stop." And people are so focused on the pain, that's how they responded to Pharaoh. "We want the pain to stop." They saw it as evil. They saw it as the beatings on themselves. This is all we want. And many times, even in the wilderness, we'll find later in Exodus, we'll find in Numbers, the people, when it got difficult, when there was pain, we were better off when we were back in bondage. And we have to understand that hopeless people, when they become obsessed with pain management, miss the gospel of deliverance. You say, "Well, how does that play out in our lives?" Well, it plays out in every one of us in some ways. I love what you've mentioned, Pastor Ricky, and I don't remember who quoted it, and I don't even know if I wrote it down. I'll probably butcher it. It's easier to get the guy out of slavery than it is the slavery out of the guy. It'll work. It'll work. I get a B minus. The reality is, even those of us who have accepted the delivering gospel still become overly obsessed with pain management in this life. And we miss the purpose of the gospel. The gospel is not pain management. Nowhere have we been promised that if we accept God's plan and gospel that pain will cease. But so many people, when they respond to the gospel, say, "Oh, if I follow this Jesus, then my marriage problems will be resolved. If I follow this Jesus, then my addictions will just magically go away. If I follow this Jesus, I'll get a lighter sentence in my prison term. If I follow Jesus, in some way my life will be easier. Okay, I'll give it a shot." Earlier chapter 5 of Exodus, but when they realize that following this doesn't make the pain go away, then there's a reaction to it. Because again, it clarifies they're looking to God to take their pain away. They're not looking for God to deliver them from bondage. And even as believers, we often become so focused on the pain that we forget that we've been called to be delivered from bondage. To live a life free from bondage. And the pain management, boy, that'll take place when we're in glory. That'll take place when sin and its consequences will be wiped away. That'll take place when God in His mercy may give us some little drops of water in this life, but no promise that pain will go away. God's plan is pain will go away as a part of that ultimate blessing that He has for us when sin has been eradicated. But as we live this life, brothers and sisters, we have to know there will be pain because there is sin. And although we have judicially, that we have legally been offered a contract of gospel grace that delivers us from the bondage, the pain remains.
But if we become focused on the pain itself, it creates a resentment. You know, I have been told by a professional that I'm codependent. They're right. You laugh because you're codependent too, right, Pam? Codependent, I can only be happy if you're happy. Kevin, I can only be happy if you're happy. And I can only be happy if you're happy. And I can only be happy if my wife's happy. And I can only be happy if the dog's happy. I can only be happy if everybody else is happy. And so codependents are those, they kind of live their life just trying to make everybody happy, doing what they think everybody else wants them to do, because if they're happy, oh, good, I'm happy because they're happy. And that, in a nutshell, is what many people get 4 years a degree to understand. But as a codependent person, often my first go-to is, how do I make everybody feel better? How can I make everybody happy? How can I fix it? And guys, you can understand this as a husband. How can I fix my kid's problem? How can I fix my spouse's problem? At work, how can I fix these issues? And we are wired in a way that we just got to fix it, make the pain go away. And when we seem to successfully do that, we get accolades and we get rewarded and we get bonuses. And so it just reinforces the fact, man, this life is just a matter of pain management. But if that becomes our focus, we miss what God has for us in experiencing a deliverance from the bondage in this life. And if you're one who has not yet accepted the gospel, and you're living this life, and even in church today, hoping that your presence here might just help the pain manage a little bit better, I want to say to you, that's not what God is calling you to. If you're here today and you know you're struggling with an addiction, and that addiction could be anything from eating, it could be work, it could be alcohol, it could be any number of things. There's anything in this world that in and of itself is not a bad thing, but we go to that to mask our pain. We go to that to make life easier. We go to that to have more so that it'll just be a little bit easier as we move through life. And that becomes our focus. Well, our focus is we're really hopeless, and so we're just going to manage pain. God's calling us away from that. The enemy would love us to wallow in that. It'd love us to wallow in the fact that this life is just a series of managing the painful circumstances that we face. The second thing about hopeless people, and one reason why they often neglect the gospel or reject the gospel, is because they blame others for their pain. Yeah, that became very clear when we were reading through this earlier. The first one they blamed was Pharaoh. It's Pharaoh's fault that we're in pain. He didn't recognize, they didn't say, it's Pharaoh's fault we're in bondage. They said, it's Pharaoh's fault that we're in pain. So we'll go to Pharaoh and we'll ask Pharaoh to ease up on us. Well, they didn't realize that Pharaoh wasn't the reason for their pain. Even when they were talking to Pharaoh, they said, because you can't look at Pharaoh and say it's your fault, they said it's the Egyptian people's fault. They blamed the world. It's this world's fault. This world is out to get me. This world is out to take advantage of me. It's their fault. All the pain I have is their fault. So we appeal to the world. Well, if I can be more like the world, if I can figure out the world, if I can manage my relationship with this world, if I could just do that, then I've managed my pain, because it's the world's fault. Well, then they came to Moses and Aaron. They looked at them and said, it's your fault. You, God's representatives. Man, it's the church's fault. You know, the reason I have pain in life is because I go to church and they make me feel guilty for what's happening in my life. Or I go to church and for some reason this religion is, it's their fault. And if I'm going to manage this pain, boy, the church needs to change. I mean, you need to do something different. You need to help me. You need to respond to me in a different way so that I feel better about my pain. Well, it's not the church's fault. It's not the world's fault. It's not Pharaoh's fault. Well, then they look at God and say, God, it's your fault. It's your fault there's pain in my life. God says, no, it's not my fault there's pain in your life. I'm allowing pain in your life, but it's not my fault. But if we look at God and say, it's your fault there's pain in my life, our focus is going to be simply on that. What does it do? It breeds a resentment. It breeds a bitterness even towards God, because we become bitter at those who produce the pain in our life. Man, I get angry with the devil when he brings pain in my life. I get angry at the world when they bring pain in my life. I get angry at the church when they bring pain in my life. And I get angry at God when he brings pain in my life. But if I'm obsessed with the pain, then I'll blame those others for the reason for the pain, and my faith becomes, if they will ease up, my pain will change. If God would just let up, if the enemy, if Satan were just let up, if this world would just let up, if the church would just let up, then my situation would be better. See, hopeless people think if somebody else changes, then my life will be better. But again, they're not looking for deliverance. They're looking for pain management, back to the first point, which leads us to our conclusion in this relationship. When God looked at Moses and said, "Now you'll see what I will do," when he entered into this relationship, he made that phrase, I think it's in verse 5, he said, I remembered my covenant, the end of verse 5. And we think, well, glad God remembered. I mean, it's about time God remembered. Well, that word doesn't remember. It's not like when someone said, "Hey, did you remember that it's our anniversary tomorrow?" You know, that Bonnie needs to remind me. Do you remember it's our anniversary? Yes, of course I remember it's our anniversary tomorrow, and thank you for asking if I remember, because now I remember. That's a problem. My wife Bonnie, she knew that I struggle with memory, so in my first wedding band, not my first wife, the same wife, but the first wedding band that she gave to me, it had the date 12/21. That's our anniversary, December 21st. And it was good because then she made every password to everything in my life 12/21. And she knew that if you're going to remember the password to access anything, I just realized what I just did. I just told all of you my passwords to everything. They have required me to increase that to at least 8 letters, so it has changed a little bit, but 12/21 is still in there. If I forget our anniversary, then I have no access to any of our funds. That was her plan. It worked. I know her anniversary, 12/21. See, that's not the remembrance we're talking about here. God didn't forget. And then, I just remembered. This remembers a lot more like my great-nephew, Levi. Levi's got a birthday coming up, December 20th, I think his birthday, day before my anniversary. See, I'm pretty smart. And Levi, my great-nephew, comes every time I see him in the last month. You remember my birthday? Remember my birthday? What are we going to do for my birthday? And we've got plans. Aunt Bonnie and I, we got plans with Levi, and we're going to celebrate his 11th birthday. But every time he comes and he asks, "Do you remember my birthday?" Of course, I remember it's your birthday. But what he's really asking is, what are we going to do? When are you going to act? When are you going to act on my birthday? Uncle Bob, when are you going to act on my birthday? And what God is saying to Moses is, I have now decided to act on the covenant that I've made with you. He's not saying, "I just remember, I totally forgot about this covenant relationship. I need to do something." As they're groaning, they're at their point of death, they're at the point of drowning. I just remembered I'm supposed to do something. No, he said, this is the moment that I chose to act. And God is saying that the moment when we recognize I am totally hopeless, managing pain has failed, blaming others has failed, will get me nowhere, I must allow God to do a work in my life, that's when God will act. And God will act by offering us the hope of deliverance that brings us into relationship that results in blessing. And he offered this to Israel. He offered this to Moses on Mount Sinai. He offered this again to the people. He offered it again when Jesus came. And what was the response of those who were hopeless? They rejected Jesus because of their hopelessness. But then Jesus has offered and planned for us through his death, his burial and resurrection, the blood, the ultimate sacrifice to seal this covenant. And it's offered to us. But when we come to him at that moment of hopelessness, there are some that the enemy will whisper in our ear, "Don't trust God. Look at the pain. Don't trust those people and what they say, because look at the pain." Where God is saying, "Come unto me, all you who are burdened and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." We have an opportunity to humble ourselves. Humility is different than hopelessness. Humility is when we recognize the reality of our condition, but then we allow God to do a work. Hopelessness in and of itself just wallows in the misery. Humility recognizes my place, but knows there's hope through Jesus Christ alone. And with that hope and with that promise, we have an opportunity to respond to the gospel that he has for us. There may be some here today. I know there's some here today. I shouldn't say maybe. There are some here today that you're not following. You haven't accepted that work of Jesus on your behalf. You're still going through life trying to manage the pain and misery of this life on your own. And I want to say to you, today ought to be the day that you've heard this covenant offer again. You've heard the gospel offered again. And when we say this is your only hope, I mean by that, this is the only hope to be delivered from the bondage,
Delivered from the bondage. Seek deliverance from bondage to sin. Don't just seek pain management. Stop blaming others and accept what God has done. For those believers who were still working on getting the slave out of us, recognize that our response to the gospel is not to manage the pain. Our response to the gospel is not to blame others for the problems in our life. Our response to the gospel is to live as those who have been delivered from bondage. And it's to follow in obedience to what God has for us. Recognize that He will give us hope and confidence and the perseverance to deal with the pain. And He'll give us the opportunity to have relationships in the body of Christ. And despite of differences, we can be in unity because of the cross. And we can move forward in this life with hope, full of hope, in the midst of them, some of that same pain, knowing that it's God who's going to do a work in us.